was an unknown wilderness. It wasn't long before they went into the wide valleys of Kentucky through the Cumberland Gap.
Welcome to this edition of Old Kentucky Tales, the only podcast that solemnly swears that none of its participants have carried victorious corn shuckers upon our shoulders. Gotta be true this time, right? You've never done that?
No, I haven't.
All right, we are safe. Today's title is The Super Bowl of Corn Shucking. I am your host, Brent Taylor, Assistant Professor of History at West Kentucky Community and Technical College. And with me is the man who never prevaricates when he communicates. He is an Associate Professor of Communication at West Kentucky Community and Technical College, Jason Donner.
Maybe I have, maybe I haven't. I can't say for sure.
You might be prevaricating right this very minute. Hold on a minute. I'm sensing a problem for us. We have to rewrite that. In this episode of Old Kentucky Tales, we will look at the words of Abraham Lincoln in our Rock the Quote segment. And for our main event, we will examine the intense sport of 19th century corn husking. And along the way, don't forget to support the fake history sponsors, real products that fakely support Old Kentucky Tales. We have to clear up a misconception there. Some people think that they are fake, but they are 100% real.
Yes, they're real products that existed, but they are long since dead, and we get no money for that.
That's right. That's why they are fakely sponsoring
our
program.
There's no money, right? You're not getting money.
If I prevaricate here, is that a problem?
1926 cigarette ad. Okay, good.
All right. We are now ready to rock the quote. Are you ready to rock?
Yeah.
I think to lose Kentucky is nearly the same as to lose the whole game.
What on earth did he mean by that?
Abraham Lincoln, 1861.
Let's go back to that border state issue. Is that what he's getting at or what?
It's exactly the border state issue.
Okay.
He was writing to one of his friends. It was a fellow senator, and they came up with some problems about some different policies that the government had had in the initial stages of the war. Mm-hmm. It was how they were treating the people of Missouri and some things about private property rights and things like that. And so when he wrote in the explanation, he told him, look, I've got to be really careful with how I handle the border states. Because if I lose Kentucky, then I'm going to lose Missouri.
Right.
And then I'm going to lose Maryland. And pretty soon, it's not 11 states that have rebelled. It's 12, it's 13, it's 14, it's 15. And he said, pretty soon, that's going to be a job that's bigger than we can do.
Okay. Oh, so he's referring, I thought you meant like in the vote.
Oh, no, this
but
is the Civil War. He's talking about
Kentucky
the nation.
Goes with the Confederacy.
Yeah. That's exactly what it's
I
about.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So you say rock the quote. I'm thinking rock the vote.
Oh, that's where I misled you on that one. It took you right down the voting trail. I bet that's 100% correct.
Was there a state that kind of did that at all? Or was it always just straight up Confederacy and no waffling, really? Right?
Well, it was a process.
Yeah.
So South Carolina went first. And then sort of slowly, it was the Deep South in the initial wave. And then there was kind of a second wave in which the Upper South,
right,
Virginia and North Carolina went. North Carolina was the very last one. They almost didn't go.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I mean.
But then there's Kentucky. And of course, we were very pro-Union, so we didn't want to quit America. Just different situations in different states, making up the politics of all that. But Lincoln was very adamant about saying, look, the border states are important. You cannot afford to offend them in 1861. We want to keep them in the Union.
And plus, that's his home state, I guess. That's another topic we maybe talk about sometime. Did he think of Kentucky
three different
or Illinois?
Three different states claim him.
Yeah,
so,
but what did Lincoln think?
Well, that's an interesting question. We might have to dig into that one a little bit.
We should do that sometime.
And right now, we're going to dig into some fake money with a word from our sponsors.
My electric bill is the biggest bargain in my family budget.
Yes, indeed it is, Mrs. Homemaker. You wonder sometimes, where on earth does my money go? Well, if you don't keep a record of your family's budget, this list will help you determine how your expenses are divided. Food, 24.8%. Housing, 11.4%. Clothing and accessories, 9.4%. Automobiles and parts, 5.1%. Alcoholic beverages, 3.3%. Personal savings, 7.0%. Tobacco, 2.0%. Electricity, 1.2%. Louisville Gas and Electric Company.
How about that, Jason?
This little list I'm just looking over.
Yeah, so according to this from the Louisville Gas and Electric Company, you're actually spending more on tobacco in 1958 than you are on electricity.
Mm-hmm. Well, then the food is such a large part of it, even more than housing.
Yeah, 24.8%. I would say, though, that's probably still true if you started adding things up. I guess
total food for the whole house.
For the whole month? $200 a week, that's $200, $400, $600, $800.
Yeah.
That would be greater than my mortgage payment.
So they're just trying to convince you that, you maybe don't like paying for this relatively new thing, electricity. I don't know, but it's not that cheap. I mean, it's not that expensive as you might think it is.
Not as expensive. Right. And you bring up an interesting issue because I have heard of people from a certain generation back then. They had no use for electricity.
Yeah.
Why would I ever want to put that in my house? Mm-hmm. I grew up without it. Don't need it now. There probably is a little bit of convincing in 1958. Some of the last places, hey, maybe this is something you really do want, and it's really not that much money.
And they think of it even as luxury, maybe.
Yeah.
It's an optional luxury for some people. Yeah.
And people I've heard of people being scared of having electricity put into their house.
Yeah.
Which I guess it makes sense on a certain level because it is very, very dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
If you have an exposed circuit or something like that, or you put your finger into the light socket. I mean, the first lesson that we always tell little kids is that, right?
Yeah, but they got fires going, candles. That's probably...
That had to have been more dangerous,
way more
right?
dangerous, right?
Yeah, I think maybe if they thought about it that way, you no longer have this open flame in your house. That maybe could be a convincing point for them.
Alcoholic beverages is way up there, too.
It sure was. Electricity is a real bargain compared to some of these things, according to their numbers. And they say they got them from the U.S. Department of Commerce. So that was the era of cheap energy. We kind of had a little golden age there where gas didn't cost much.
Right.
Electricity is pretty cheap and all that. When we get to the 70s, that's a whole different story. And now the main part of the story is the main event, and that is the not-so-serious business of corn husking.
Now, you mean, obviously, peeling that husk off the corn, right? We're harvesting this thing.
Yeah. It's
Someone's
been harvested. Now we have to process it.
There's no way to get that off of there unless it takes the human hand to just rip it apart.
Yeah. Yeah, even today, they sell it in the husk at the store sometimes, and you go and you just peel it off
of it. I'm sure you did that when you were growing up.
Oh,
the garden, you peel that off, those little strings.
It was more than a garden for us. We had a whole field full of it.
Yeah.
So small farm situation.
Yeah.
Basket after basket.
Grind it up, grind that hard corn like into one of those grinders, shove it down there and create some corn for the chickens or something like that? I did that all the time.
We did some stuff like that. We also had the conveyor belt that took it up into the silo.
Yeah, right.
And you had to shovel it onto the conveyor belt.
Yeah.
Out of the wagon.
Okay,
like that.
So you for real had like a little farm going.
So, I mean, I've seen some of this stuff in action. And I will tell you that shucking corn for a child is pretty fun for about two dozen worth. And then once you hit the third dozen, you're thinking, oh, man, why can't we just move to the city?
Yeah. Or snapping those beans. Nothing, I think, worse than shelling a bean.
That is definitely a bad
one. People are going to love this part of it. Little glimpse into our lives there, shelling those beans. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. So
the corn husking contest.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's a whole lot of work. And we've seen in other episodes previously that they don't have a lot of leisure time. So they try to combine leisure with work.
Mm-hmm.
From time to time in the 19th century, just try to find a way to take this huge amount of work, which is a ginormous pile of corn over here.
Right.
And is there some way that we can make it fun? Dr. Daniel Drake told us how they made this fun. He grew up to be a doctor, of course, but he grew up on a farm, similar situation. And when he grew older, he wanted to write a series of letters to his children describing to them what life was like for him when he was young.
Yeah, that's a cool idea.
It was a really cool idea. Yeah. And eventually it got compiled into a whole book.
Makes sense.
And one of the sections here was about corn husking. So Dr. Daniel Drake tells us, when the crop was drawn in, the ears were heaped into a long pile or rick. So there's just some vocabulary. The rick is the pile of corn. Yeah. A night fixed on and the neighbors notified rather than invited. You see that? See what he did there? You're coming to this.
Yeah.
So see you on Tuesday.
Now. Right. Yeah. Notified.
You are notified rather than invited, for it was an affair of mutual assistance. You're actually going to go over to their house on Thursday and do the same thing again, right? As they assembled at nightfall, the green glass quart whiskey bottle, stopped with a cob, was handed to everyone, man and boy, as they arrived to take a drink. A sufficient number to constitute a sort of quorum having arrived, two men, or more commonly two boys, constituted themselves or were by acclamation declared captains. This is like the pickup basketball game.
Right.
You've all done that where...
You split up into teams.
Of course. And you've got the captain. The captain has the first pick and the second pick. And then whoever's picked last is upset. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so they're doing the same thing here like you would do today with sports. They paced the rick and estimated its contractions and expansions with the eye till they were able to fix on the spot on which the end of the dividing rail should be. So we have one gigantic large pile. That's the rick. We're going to take the rail and we're going to put it right down the middle of the rick so that we've got two halves of the corn.
Right. So they're deciding, like, where's the dividing line? Equal halves.
And the contest is who can do which half more quickly.
Yeah.
That's it. So this is like in football, where you've seen the coin toss at football, and then if you win the coin toss, you get to pick which side of the field you're defending.
Right.
And if you want the ball first and all that. We're going to do the exact same thing here. This is what's so amazing about this.
Mm-hmm.
You start thinking about modern sports traditions, and you see them here in these cornfields. Way before we had the modern sport of football, for example.
Or people do it too, just like, let's split this cookie. I'll split it, but you get to pick which one you want.
Yeah, it's the same. It's like a kind of a human thing where you're splitting there. The choice depended on the tossing of the chip. So we don't have a coin. We probably don't have a lot of money here in this kind of economy.
Right.
So we've got a little wood chip.
Yeah, this little wooden chip.
Now, the problem with the wood chip is you don't have heads and tails. So you've got to differentiate.
You just gnaw a little mark in there somewhere.
That's close.
With your gnawing tooth.
One side of which had spit upon.
Oh.
So we've got, instead of heads and tails, we have spits and dries.
Yeah, a little.
And you got to call it in the air.
A little stain on there.
The choice of men was decided in the same manner. So who gets the first round pick? Who gets the first pick in our corn husking fantasy challenge? You do it with that chip toss too. And in a few minutes, the rick was charged upon by the rival forces. As others arrived, the owner had given each bottle as he fell in according to the end that he belonged to. The captains planted themselves on each side of the rail, sustained by their most active operatives. There at the beginning was the great contest, for it was lawful to cause the rail to slide or fall toward your own end, shortening it and lengthening the other. Before I was 12 years old, I had stood many years near the rail, either as a captain or private, and although 50 years have rolled away, I have never seen a more anxious rivalry nor a fiercer struggle.
And they're drinking the whole time, too, right?
That's in the background of this.
Yeah.
That's right.
Which fuels that competition.
Uh-huh. And it might explain the next thing. It was there that I first learned that competition is the mother of cheating, falsehood, and broils.
Uh-huh.
So there's all these different ways you could cheat at this game. It's just like in basketball. Sometimes they palm the ball.
Right.
Sometimes they try to do a double dribble. Sometimes there's a goaltend that wasn't really a block. I mean, mm-hmm. there's so many different things. That's why there's referees.
Right.
But we don't really have referees here.
So let's take, like, I assume they're, like, taking corn over to the other side. They're trying to slide it over there.
Yep,
throw
that's
it
part
over
of it.
There.
There's a lot of ways, he says, that you can do this. Corn might be thrown over unhusked. So that is, you just take the ear, don't even get the silk off of there, and you just throw it over.
Nobody's watching.
Yeah. The rail might be pulled toward you by the hand dexterously applied underneath. So that is, you're shortening your half of the brick.
Right.
Okay. Your husked corn might be thrown so short a distance as to bury up the projecting base of the pile on the other side. So that is, they can't get to their corn because you're kind of interfering with that. If charged with any of these tricks, so here it comes.
Yeah.
You have been there on the playground. You cheated.
Right.
If charged with any of these tricks, you of course denied it. And there the matter sometimes rested. No, I didn't do that, man. What are you talking about? I didn't do that.
Yeah.
At other times, the charge was reaffirmed. Oh, yeah, you did. I saw you. And then rebutted with, you're a liar. Now, today we hear this a lot. In the 19th century, that really meant something.
Yeah, like a bigger deal.
You do not accuse people of this unless it is dead to rights,
mm-hmm.
because it's a very serious kind of thing. And then a fight, at the moment or at the end, settled the question of veracity. The heap cut in two. The parties turned their backs upon each other, and making their hands keep time with a peculiar sort of time, the chorus of voices on a still night might be heard as far as a mile. The oft-replenished whiskey bottle meanwhile circulated freely, and at the close, the victorious captain, mounted on the shoulders of some of the stoutest men, with the bottle in one hand and his hat in the other, was carried in triumph around the vanquished party, amidst shouts of victory which rent the air. And mm-hmm. how many times have you seen something like that at the Super Bowl?
Right, yeah. They
get there to the very end.
Up on the shoulders.
They dump the Gatorade all over them.
Yeah.
Then they lift them up and carry them off the field.
Mm-hmm.
And you start
the team, the quarterback.
Yeah, and you start thinking about, well, I guess all of those traditions started somewhere,
mm-hmm.
and it might not have been the football field.
Well, it's almost natural, too, when someone's the leader, you lift that leader up over the head of the other leader.
Yeah, yeah. But maybe that Super Bowl tradition started right there.
Maybe so.
In the middle of some corn activity.
Then what? I mean, that's
then
it.
Came
they,
the supper.
They've won.
No, that's
They're
not
victorious.
All. That's not all. Then came the supper, on which the women had been busily employed. So this is an all-guy kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. You just got to eat afterwards. You've worked hard.
Of course you have, which always included a pot pie. And you know that a 19th century pot pie was the real thing, right?
Yeah.
You know it's going to be all natural butter and everything mm-hmm. else. Either before or after eating, the fighting took place. Remember all those accusations about who cheated? We're going to settle that. And by midnight, the sober were found assisting the drunken home.
Well, a tradition that continues on. That's only...
a tradition unlike any other.
Being a good friend or a good sport.
Yeah. Friends know when to walk friends home after a good corn shucking.
Mm-hmm.
That's it entirely. And we got to know how to be a good friend to our sponsors here, because You Can't Smoke History. This is a special message brought to us by Will Rogers in 1926. A fellow from Carolina wants to know where I get the idea that Bull Durham and George Washington came from the same state. He says, why don't you write and give the people the real history of Bull Durham in its native state, South Carolina, that people would appreciate more than these bull legends of yours. Now, thanks, sir, for your good-natured suggestion. If I knew history, I wouldn't be able to write Bull Durham ads. I would be a college professor, get everything right, and get nothing for it. Boy, did he have that.
Yeah.
Everything you suggested, me telling the public about when and where Bull Durham originated, has been told for 66 years by advertising writers. That's the only thing the company asked of me, was please don't tell again where it came from or how. So this is like a little joke.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
He spoke in that way, too. He kind of spoke in...
Well, yeah, he's a humorist.
In a humorous way and kind of almost in a teasing backwards kind of way sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. So what he did was he did this on purpose. Mm-hmm. You didn't read their ads, but you did read mine and remembered it because it was wrong. And that was the little trick.
Right.
So it's a lot of fake history there, designed to get the people to buy the stuff. Right. 2 bags for 15 cents make 100 cigarettes. So you're rolling your own.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Bull Durham cigarettes from 1926. And now are you ready?
Oh,
are you ready?
You mean the takeaway?
The takeaway.
We're at that moment?
We are there. It has arrived.
Very efficient this time.
More efficient than usual, yeah. I must say.
I think I really like the comparison, or rather just that story about people working together, making a kind of a game out of helping each other complete their task, this large project of the harvesting and shucking the corn. You know, that you don't see that a lot happen now. Mm. You don't see a community come together. Maybe when something truly serious would happen, yeah, people do that and help each other out. But just part of the workforce, part of this thing that would happen every year at everybody's house, and they go around handling this huge physical task together.
Yeah.
Why not make it fun?
Yeah, yeah. And I guess you really are onto something there. We do see this sense of community, but it's usually in some kind of an emergency.
Right.
The hurricanes or the shootings and things like that where people are going to rush to give blood.
People still do it, but it's not – I guess we – don't need to get together, or we just don't do that together. Like we work together to build a barn, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
That
was
the
same
tradition.
Sort of spirit.
You know, barn burns down, everybody gets together to build that barn back up.
Yeah, so maybe we might revisit that a little bit, sense of community. Good takeaway. We have now turned to the final page of this chapter, but never fear, and you really aren't scared. Correct? Haven't we established that? That when we get to this point, you're not really scared?
I'm totally comfortable at this point.
All right. Never fear, more quirky old Kentucky tales are yet to be told. Special thanks to our sound engineer, Todd Birdsong, the Paducah School of Art and Design, and WKMS, and the rest is history.
Unknown wilderness. It wasn't long before they went into the wide valleys of Kentucky through the Cumberland Gap.